welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name is Ted McIntyre, and this show is for the week of October 19th, 2020. Today, we're joined by our co-host, the author and educator, Ms. Mariah Tinger. How are you doing, Mariah?
I am doing well, and I'm looking forward to an enthusiastic discussion or debate, maybe even, about whether our listeners could handle, or individuals could handle, a regular planned power outage to decrease greenhouse gas emissions, or is continuous access to electricity our right? So I'm excited to talk about that with you today, Ted.
So Mariah, we happened upon an intriguing, thought-provoking article that caught me up a little bit short. It's an article in a website called Boston Review, which has been popping up on my timeline more frequently lately. And before we talk about the article, I guess I'd pull back to my own recollection that when COVID happened and the airline traffic collapsed and nobody was on an airplane, we talked about it. And I think one of the topics that came up from the COVID reduction in air travel was to question, do human beings have some inherent human right to travel by air, as I say, to get to China in 10 hours? Is that something that's inalienable, that you are God-given right to be able to do that? I'd argue that no, it's not. These are choices we're making, although we feel incredibly entitled to be able to do that for various reasons, although there's no reason you should be able to do it. And of course, in the face of climate, there are reasons not to do things like fly on big jet planes. So that brings me to this second article that made a second kind of proposal for a post-COVID world, but basically makes you think. And the thesis of the article is the following, the way I would put it. The author says that renewable energies have intermittency. Right? We've talked about this endless times, right? The sun doesn't shine, the wind doesn't blow, blah, 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 blah. And the answer is always, okay, yeah, let's build some batteries, battery storage. And we have talked, I think, accurately about the tremendous advances in battery storage that are coming. Okay, but they're not quite here yet, but they're coming. They're going to be here soon. At the same time, the clock is ticking to a 2030 deadline that cannot be extended, right? Physics imposes this 2030 deadline if we want to stay below 1.5 degrees of temperature rise. So the question the guy poses is, in that circumstance, we could, for example, turn off all of the coal plants in the country. And what would be the downside of that? The downside of just turning off all the coal plants in the country would be we might have intermittent electric power. And that raises the question or the observation that, at least in my life, I am entirely addicted to having the electricity on 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 52 weeks a year. I want the electricity there all the time, right? And that imposes a huge burden on the people that have to produce the electricity, because they have to, when the power goes out, it's a terrible thing. This guy asked the question, maybe that's not the most terrible thing in the world. Maybe if we had planned power outages, we wouldn't have to run the coal plant so much. And would we be any the worse off for that? And so I will say first, I was aghast at the idea of not having electricity 7x24. Do you think, Mariah, let's just begin as a argument point. I mean, could you live if you knew that next Saturday afternoon from 1 to 4, you were not going to have any electricity?
That's a good question. I mean, I think that if, you know, the key here is that if it's planned, right, when it throws you for a loop, right, our power went out, I think, last week. And, you know, I had phone calls I needed to make, and there was no internet connection, and my kids had school, then they needed to be online for school. And it definitely threw us all for a loop. So I had laundry to do. I mean, right? You know, you can't do anything if you aren't anticipating that. But if it was planned, if it was something where it was like, okay, you know, from this hour to this hour, there won't be electricity, and you can count on that, and you can sort of shape your day around that. I think, of course, we can make it happen. I mean, you know, you end up having like, okay, so it's every Saturday night is like candlelight everything, right? You do everything by candlelight. And there's like a certain hygge to that where, you know, the term, the Danish term for coziness, you know, you have candle, you're reading by candlelight and you have candles everywhere. I actually think the Danish, they're responsible for like the majority of candle sales.
Oh, really?
Candle sales in the world, because this hygge concept is big for them, right? So they do a lot of things by candlelight, and maybe that would be a little more hygge for us. That could be nice.
Okay, right? Sorry, I got to derail us a completely different direction. Can you speak more to that? Because that's an entirely enchanting idea of just turn off all the lights for an evening, live by candlelight. Right. Well, you know, knowing that you can turn the power on if you want.
Right. There we go. We just invented the campaign, you know, like candlelight once a week. So, yeah, I mean, you know, there's not like for hundreds of years, and not hundreds of years. Right. Well, thousands of years. We never had electricity, and we figured it out, right? Of course, we didn't have internet, we didn't have computers, and we didn't have phones in our pockets and all of these other things. But we can survive without.
The article touches a lot of stuff, right? It's a wide-ranging article, but it talks about, you know, the call for self-sacrifice, right? I mean, there's this Jimmy Carter, famously, I remember him being on TV with his sweater on, right? You weren't born yet, but he was he had his sweater on, and he just, oh my God, people killed him, right? Because of the call for sacrifice. And so, but it really, once you start thinking about it, you say, oh my God, yes, I think that I'm entitled to 7x24 electricity. People in Puerto Rico, their food's rotting. They don't have any insulin. I mean, all this stuff. And that there are countries of the world where through mismanagement, again, you know, mismanagement and whatnot, you know, they have regular rotating power outages. And we are already on the verge of this, because we have load shedding. Place I used to work, when it got hot in the summertime, note would come on 10 o'clock in the morning, all the lights in the office area would dim down, right? Because they were shedding power. And we're all part of the, shave the peak effort during the summertime, right? We're actively doing these things already. So what's so difficult about imagining planning it? But again, it comes back to shocking us into thinking, you know, how privileged we are, and it's not necessarily has to be that way, no?
Right. I think you make a good point, right? There are a lot. I say that, you know, we can live without power. Well, we can, but there are things that that are harder, right? So certainly, you know, keeping things cool and medicine, all of those things are critical. And so I think we'd have to find solutions for that. But then to push back on your other point, you know, that it needs to be something that, you know, we're self-sacrifice in a certain way. I do have some issue with that. I think that one of the things that sort of derailed the environmental movement and polarized it and made it sort of distasteful to a lot of people was this whole idea that was actually promoted by a lot of the worst polluters. They kind of put out this idea that cleaning up the environment falls on the citizens, right? We, you know, it's our fault that we're littering. It's our fault that we're not recycling. And, you know, shame on you home for littering and not recycling and not doing your part to save the environment. So that was an idea that came from the major corporations who are doing most of the polluting to get us to fight with each other and to be pointing fingers at each other rather than looking at them and saying, no, you guys are the problem. You know, you corporations are the ones who need to clean up your act. And so I think that self-sacrifice, asking people to self-sacrifice can be, I don't know if red herring is quite the right word, but the idea that you're sort of turning away from the real problem, which is the corporations that are doing most of the pollution, to fall back on the citizens who are not doing the majority of the pollution. And so is it really me as a citizen that needs to lose 6 hours of power, or maybe is it some of these corporations that need to find better solutions?
Ooh, man, that's a good one. I like that. I like that story. Okay, I'll take that. The idea that we should all sacrifice for the common good, of course, is noble, but it is sort of sleight of hand, misdirection, basically a marketing technique to transfer the responsibility away from the corporate bad guys, right?
Yeah, I mean, because there's a lot that they can do where they are sort of, you know, you can have smart grids running the city, which tells them when they can run certain, you know, high energy machinery or manufacturing processes and when they can't. And, you know, that's probably going to do more than us, you know, you and I turning off our lights for the article was saying hours a year, right? Like,
they were saying that most people experience 6 hours of downtime on average per year.
Oh, right, so right.
6 hours without electricity per year seems like, you know, we should be able to do more than that.
Yeah.
But now right. I'm shifting from my own initial idea that, you know, how bad we all are for feeling entitled for the electricity to channeling my anger to say, well, the utilities can lose some money by putting in battery storage, even if it's more expensive.
Well, right.
Why should I take the hit?
And I mean, more to the point is it will probably have a bigger effect, I would think, too. Right. If you have these, you know, you and I are not the ones who are causing the biggest climate effect. Sure, we make a difference and sure, every little bit helps, but it's not us that's really changing the atmosphere. It's the big companies and the emissions that they're creating.
Right.
I think isn't it only like 20, it's something, it's even a small percentage of the companies that exist. It's maybe it's 20 or 200 or something small that creates the majority of emissions.
Well, and that comes back to the show we did talking about where is the decision being made for the pollution. So you say that as individual actors, it's hard to take much responsibility if there are no choices other than, you know, running a coal plant. If all of your electricity is coming from a coal plant, we don't beat up the person who's using the electricity from the coal plant. You say, who made the choice to keep that coal plant operational?
Well, right. I mean,
that's your argument, right? That's where the decision was made, and that's where the culpability is.
To come full circle, I mean, you kind of opened the show talking about, well, do we really need to fly to China? Well, how about if we could fly to China with zero emissions? Then would it be okay? Right. I mean, then there are great benefits from travel, of course. Right. You can maybe go virtually to another country, or you can, there are ways you could kind of replicate it, but to really understand another country and another culture, you go and you live there, right. You learn a lot more from living somewhere for a month than you do from, you know,
looking at National Geographic for your whole life.
Watching a video about the place. You get the smells, you get conversations with people, and it can open your mind. It can diversify your thoughts and your opinions. And yes, it's a privilege, but maybe it's a worthwhile one. And maybe it's not about, you know, not flying. Maybe it's about putting the innovation towards making flying zero emissions.
Well, or I would say you go back to a lower carbon form of existing. You take the train. I mean, I swear to God, I know that there's, I don't know, but I'm pretty confident that in 50 years there will be a huge dirigible that ferries people across the Atlantic running on solar power, right? A big Hindenburg covered with solar panels, and that's how you get back. And it might take a week, right? But you're going to go and you're going to get all the sights and smells of London, right? Have your fish and chips in Whitehall, right? Yeah. And get the whole deal, but it won't be from spewing jet engine exhaust up there. So I don't know. So I guess, dear listener, you should take a read of this article. Mariah has turned me around. I came in with a different feeling, but it is an interesting, the concept of what we're entitled to, right? What we're willing to give up, what trade-offs you make against to somehow build a better world, right? What sacrifices you would make And who are the real people to be mad at? I mean, I can't not mention, you talked about the American Indian crying over the plastic litter in that famous 1960s commercial, right? But it's also true that I read that it was British Petroleum that popularized the idea of a carbon footprint, right? Your personal carbon contribution that you ought to be aware of and carry around like Jacob Marley's chains, right? Mm-hmm. That this was your responsibility. When you say, well, wait a minute, British Petroleum, you're the one that's selling me the fossil fuels, right? And they managed to transfer it to the individual. I spent a lot of time worried about my carbon footprint when in fact I should have been. So anyway, Mariah, thank you for an interesting discussion. We will put up a link.
Always scintillating.
A link to the original article that started us down this path. You can read it. Let us know what you think about world. And I guess just as an aside, I mean, part of that article we shouldn't pass over was, you know, the environmental social justice aspects of cutting off power to people, right? Which is a whole sort of topic in itself. We'll put up the link. Dear listener, please read it. Decide, send in your vote whether or not you agree with Mariah or you think that we humans are not entitled to 7x24 humans. We Americans, we North American, well-to-do people, are we entitled to continuous electric power? That will be at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. You can send that email complaining about what you just heard to podcast@massclimateaction.net. Let us know what you think. You can listen to you're listening to the show on some sort of smartphone streaming app. Please tell all your friends they can find the show on their favorite streaming app. Please rank us if you spend enough time looking at your phone to find the ranking button. I want to thank DR Tucker for his continuing research support. It keeps us jumping, DR. We appreciate it. We want to close where we always close, by saying that we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, that we accept responsibility for building a durable future, that we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. Because of those things, we have to insist that the United States transform its energy sector over the next decade under a just and equitable plan that uses regulation, investment, and a price on carbon to safeguard our future. So, Mariah, you talked me into it. Thank you very much.
Thanks for being here. Lots of fun.
And thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.